Welcome back to Tasteland. I am your co-host, Francis Zierer.
And I'm Daisy Aliotto.
And today we're talking with Ariel Rubin, who is the head of content at AIR. Full disclosure, my former employer, my former boss. One of the most fun people to work with I've ever worked with. He's kind of an insanely creative, risk-taking type of marketer in a world of software where so much is really boring. I learned a lot from him working with him. So one of my greatest enemies and mentors.
Facts.
Facts.
And I met, well, I know him as Ari. We are working together on a new Instagram native magazine for creative complaining through Dart, edited by Danny Loftist, who we'll definitely have on the podcast at some point. And it's called ick.fyi. You should definitely be following it. We're asking cool people what they hate. Sort of the inverse perfectly imperfect.
You know, they need a Wario. I think we could burst the industrial complex.
And let me tell you, I have so many icks. But most of them are moral in nature. And we did get into that.
You're a moral person.
This episode is a little bit political, trigger warning. So if it's not the vibe for you right now, if you don't want to think about the future of America, maybe.
There's vibes good and bad.
Or Canada. Ari is in Toronto. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, we got a report from the north. From the six.
I'm trying to think of a recent ick that I've only arrived at this week. Well, this morning, Natasha Hoskins, former Boys Club guest, texted me that she gets the ick when men do the phone eats first. Like they take a photo of
their
food before they... Well, so you're not for her, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's okay.
There's somebody for everyone. My icks, you know, it's funny when people talk about icks in a romantic context. I saw that... Magdalene Taylor, who we should totally have on some point. She's a great Substack. I had to look up what it's called.
Follow her on
Twitter. Easy to find. She went through a few different trends in dating right now. She talked about the materialists and what's going on at Bumble, which just had a ton of layoffs. There's something about the matchmaking service in the materialists that's very mathematical. And so she's basically talking about how dating isn't mathematical. And to that point, I think... when you like somebody, you don't get the ick, even things that would really give you the ick. And I can tell you the amount of ick latitude Ben has in our marriage and as well, and me as well, is like truly astronomical. He and I, so he's like pretty sensitive to heat. And so I usually drive him to the station in the morning. It's like a 10-minute walk, but I'm like,
you don't want him to overheat.
He has overheat before he even starts his commute. Like, that sucks. So I drive him to the station.
He's going
to
muss his tie.
He doesn't wear a tie, let me tell you. But we usually get coffee together at the station and then, you know, say goodbye for the day. We're standing about to order our coffee and I was like, something looks off with his shirt. And I realize it's inside out. So I'm like, baby, your shirt's inside out. You got to go to the bathroom and fix it. And he comes back.
No.
No, he fixes it. And he's like, I also forgot my belt. And I'm like, well, who cares about the belt? And
he was if he was
like,
wearing a tie, he could have used it as a belt.
He's like, it's going to be really annoying. And I was like, I got nothing for you. Like, I don't, not enough time to go home and get the belt, even if I had wanted to. And nothing on my person that could function as a belt. So, I mean, whatever. That was the biggest problem.
Where's the ick here?
Well, if you went to a first date with a guy and his shirt was inside out, how would you fucking feel?
Well, it's not a first date.
That's what I'm saying. Icks really only matter when you're getting to know somebody.
Yeah.
Once you establish a baseline level of intimacy, short of the revelation that somebody's like a horrible person, and let me tell you, it's happened to me, nothing is going to like ick you out.
Yeah.
So I think like this conversation around icks, especially in dating, which I think really comes to mind when people hear the word ick, even though we're more interested in like creative and workplace icks, it's really only relevant for people that are like just getting to know each other.
Yeah. 23-year-olds.
23-year-olds, yeah, sure. Wow. What did 23-year-olds do to you, Francis? Now you got to tell me some of your ex.
This whole
you're time, German, I've, so I I've, know you have a lot.
I've been still, I've ich bin ein
Berliner. Oh, good one.
Okay, now this whole time I've been stalling because I've been trying to think of some, but I think I'm a really tolerant person.
You are very tolerant.
Yeah, much to my chagrin.
You and I both don't like time wasters, though.
Yeah,
I think when you and I have both,
but
gotten,
I put up with them.
This is
a problem, a personal problem of mine. I'm really bad at leaving conversations, say at a party. One thing that really disgusts me, as this has kind of been a theme over the year we've been recording this podcast, I feel like I've been souring on restaurant culture. So I saw my friend sent me an Instagram reel the other day of the line outside Golden Diner, and it was at least 100 people in there. I like that restaurant a lot. I used to go there a lot before it blew up on TikTok, and I will never go there again, right?
So waiting in line gives me the ick.
Yeah, exactly. So I think I used to be more tolerant on waiting in line for stuff, and now it's like, if it's like going to be more than a 15-minute wait, let's say it's the morning, I'm like Radio Bakery or something, I know that line's going to move 15 minutes. And so, but if it's 200 people, I just think you should be ashamed of yourself. Here's an ick. Having no shame.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
More I would shame wait I world. Would wait in line for an author to sign my book.
I don't do that. Every time I've this in the past year, I've gone three or four times, I've gone to McNally Jackson for readings. Every time I dip as soon as it's time. I don't need that.
I would wait in line for an author to sign my book if I really cared about them. Mm-hmm. I should revise.
This reminds me on my favorite podcast recently, Fashion Neurosis by Bella Freud. She always asks people the same questions, but one of them is she has a great voice. I'm not going to try to.
When are we having old Bella on the pod?
I would love to. Old Bella.
Old is a sign of respect in my world.
No, I'm not. You are assuming something about my tone of voice that was not in it. But she always asks people, if you're attracted to somebody, but you dislike something they're wearing, does that kill your attraction? And it's always really interesting that it's not. The answers are kind of pretty evenly split.
But they're lying. They're lying. If you're attracted to somebody, I don't think it matters what they're wearing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does matter how they smell. I don't mean the good or bad binary. I mean like
aura. That's
attraction is chemical.
It is.
If the chemistry is there, it doesn't matter.
You did a campaign with Bonnie Blue 3 months ago. How was that?
Is that where we're starting?
That's where we're starting. I thought this was hilarious. I saw it on LinkedIn probably, or you texted it to me or something. Yeah. And I mean, my favorite part of this was how many people hated it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, sometimes you gotta, you know, when you're trying to touch the white hot core of culture, you know, the burning
blue heat,
molten blue heat, magma.
Bonnie blue heat.
So the Bonnie blue heat, you know, you're gonna alienate some people, I think. But that's okay. We like that. I like that. I think that's good. I think it's fun. I was on LinkedIn today, and I was reading this woman who posted about this tea kettle she likes, this pink tea kettle.
Mm-hmm.
It's called a Smeg.
The Smeg, yeah, Smeg. Classic.
And it was, I'm going to send this to you both after. I don't know if this is good for the pod, but I was just reading it, and it was some of the worst shit I'd ever read. It was so embarrassing. And I understand we're all living in it, and I'm not a purist, and I do it every day, but it was this millennial. She was talking about that. She kept calling the Smeg. And it was just it made me so uncomfortable and sad and feel hollowed out. And everything is so bad, I think, on LinkedIn. And I think it's fun to do stuff that gets people all up in a tizzy, and it was a fun game. I mean, look, what are you gonna, Francis, you know how it is working in the old SaaS game. You got to stand out. You got to try to take a few swings, and yeah, it was. I'm proud of it. My mom really liked it, and she doesn't like anything I do. So
yeah, what she did. She why did she?
She was like, oh, that's a good one. That's funny. I like that. She's like, oh, that's fun. I mean, listen, it's funny. It's a funny idea. Also, it's
my
not
mom
even that
liked
original.
It when I was in Playboy. Because she just people. My daughter was in Playboy. Yeah, as a writer.
Oh, I only read it for the articles.
Yeah, exactly. She thought it was very funny to be able to make that joke.
That's such a good joke.
Moms are gonna like.
That's a great mom.
Okay,
joke.
Well, we're gonna very briefly. Yeah. We have to talk about icks. I think that this was a big ick for a lot of people on LinkedIn.
Why brief? I could talk about icks this whole episode.
We'll talk about icks.
Yeah. So wait, what was an ick?
The Bonnie Blue thing.
No, it wasn't. Oh, it wasn't a thing. Well, okay. Oh, please. People like, they don't even care. No one gives a shit. It's all fucking bullshit. It's all
people
like,
just want, I mean, but people want something to be up in arms about.
Yeah.
People want something. You know, you can only make so many posts about how Liquid Death and Duolingo are revolutionizing marketing. It's 2025 by now.
Yeah.
You know, people have been harping on this for about half a decade now. So they need something new. You give the people something to pretend to have an ick about.
to pretend to be upset about. I think it's great. I think it's funny.
I'm upset that we don't even have a working definition of creator in 2025. And you know whose fault that is.
Francis. Mine?
Francis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Francis. You know, look, what can I say? I love pedantry.
And I had to beg to be in your MySpace top four on Beehive.
Mm-hmm.
I had to beg to be on your podcast.
Are we going
to
talk about that?
So here we are.
No, we're you had to what? Are
you? I had to beg to be on your podcast, Francis. I've been. This
you
is
did not
the
no.
fulfillment
not.
Of a long.
Look, I've been knocking down dream. Your door. This we started this podcast almost a year ago. I've been banging on your Carly. Door.
Does your audience even know our relationship? Right? Do they know the lore? Do they know the canonical?
Well, you know,
lore.
They will know. They will have heard it in the intro.
Yeah.
You're my greatest enemy, longtime friend. My former manager.
This is what I feel like I'm talking to myself in the mirror. That's what I usually say to myself. You know,
mm-hmm.
My greatest enemy, my long time.
I do have a camera set up there behind your mirror. So,
yes, we worked. Francis and I, we worked together. We were. It was a beautiful time.
Yeah, it was a beautiful time.
Well, I'm on a text message basis with Ari's wife, and I feel like that counts for.
Mm.
Also true. Also true. We've.
She's a lot cooler than Ari. Surprise.
Yeah, you should be chatting.
She's sold more books than he has LinkedIn followers.
That's you want to shill your wife for a sec? Yeah,
you're
Ari?
A big wife guy. Let's talk
about it.
Huge
wife guy. Folks, if you're cycling or friends with someone who has a menstrual cycle, let me tell you, the cycle book is a groundbreaking study and companion to people of all proclivities and. Propensities, and it is a fascinating guide to understanding your body and how you can use it to advocate for yourself in a medical system that largely marginalizes and puts to the side people with uteruses. And so I'm very proud of my wife who published this book, wrote this book and got it published, and is continuing to sell it and talk about it all over the world because we're in Canada, we're international.
Mm-hmm. So I guess it's all over the world.
Yeah,
we'll link it, Tom. Producer
Please.
Tom, make sure to link the book
link the
in
cycle
the description.
Book. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
100%. So it was, that was, thank you for chatting. I know, Daisy, you and her have been chatting, which is very sweet.
I teed it up. I you think did. Being a wife guy is sort of the anti-ick, so.
Mm.
Wow. Fritz, are you a wife guy? You're a fiancé guy.
I'm a fiancé guy. Yeah, I'm a big fiancé guy. I can't wait to join the ranks of this, you know, millions and billions of wife guys worldwide.
It's a hell of a fraternity.
Soon.
You're going
to
be
You know, I was talking to Daisy about this the other day. Yeah. You hear a lot about wife guys. You don't hear a lot about husband girls.
Husband ladies.
It doesn't roll off the tongue even. There's not even a word for it.
Because it's like, you know, it's because women are so.
Daisy is one, yeah.
Yeah. Well, women are so. You are one, actually, Daisy, because I saw you.
Women are so. Husband.
They're so, I think, burdened by. All the nonsense they have to carry of their husbands, like all the ugh and the ennui and the sort of like self-importance.
Yeah, should
we
ego. Get Laura to call in and
yeah, 100%. We got to talk about it. Like women are by like design when women get married, they have to become husband wives because they're like so like they have to deal with so much bullshit.
The wife guy is more of a radical concept.
Wife guy is somebody. It's like wife guy's like oh like I'm a man who has like you know some semblance of like something that's happening
I've,
outside.
I've done
me.
The dishes.
Yeah. Like I'm not the worst. But I doubt Daisy, you did post about it. You are a wife, husband, wife, because you, husband, lady, because you did a lovely LinkedIn post about your husband's play, which I saw the other day.
Yeah, multiple LinkedIn posts about my husband's play.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would love to see that play. It actually looks like a good play about Francis for old sass boys like us.
Yeah, well, okay. I this reminds me when we first started working together, we bonded on both having read Anna Wiener's book, Uncanny Valley, Slim. Memoir.
Is it Weiner or Wiener?
It's a great question.
Wine and Diner.
Wine and Diner, Dine and Dasher. Anyways, it's a brief memoir that came out in 2020 about, like, she was working in the publishing industry in New York, and then she moved to the Bay Area. It's like two kind of, you know, anonymized startups, but I think it was like GitHub and somewhere else that she worked in customer service.
She was like briefly at Artsy, right?
Probably. I think so.
Was there a company called Oyster?
Oyster?
That was like a Kindle thing?
Maybe, I don't know. Yeah. I know that they make, there's an Oyster that makes coolers.
We're just making shit up.
But anyways, I remember you telling me how like it made you want to work in the software industry.
Yeah.
I had a similar experience. You know, that was like 4 or 5 years ago now. How do you feel now that you've spent?
I don't want to do it anymore. No, just kidding.
So wait, you read it about her like losing
cautionary tale to
and leaving, and you were like, that actually sounds great. Like,
this is great. I got to do it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ari's a big sellout.
I'm a big sellout. I found myself really, I worked in the humanitarian and development space for like a decade in sort of journalism. And then I was thoroughly disillusioned at that point by like that whole space. And I went and worked at Come and Go, the gas station where I bought this hat in Iowa.
You came and you went.
I came and went.
As
did the company. Although they did.
As did well. Honey Blue.
As do we all. It's like a great, life. But yeah, so I was like reading that book and I was like, God, it's horrible. I was like, I really want to try. I think I could do this. And I have found it. I actually do. I'm just joking, but I actually weirdly find it to be like the most, I don't know. To me, it's like the most, it's the most honest actually out of all the spaces I've worked in. Like somehow.
It was
like
the most very, honestly dishonest.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like very, you're just like trying to, you're like very clearly trying to do a thing where everyone else is like in the other space, you're trying to do a thing, but you're like framing it and all this bullshit, whether it's like humanitarian space or like, I remember working for the gas station. Jana was like, making days better was the ethos and the credo, which is like lovely, but like we're like selling petrol and cigarettes. Like,
and well, I think in the words of F. Scott Fitzgerald, there are only the coming, the going, the busy, and the tired.
Wow.
Is that where they got the name?
And I'd prefer to be busy. Well, no, I'd prefer to be coming, but busy is a close second choice.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. I think it was like something that felt like fun to like see what it would like, be like. And it's
anthropological.
Yeah.
Well, you've taken to it really well, I think, because I mean, I can say having worked with you, you're one of the most kind of like neurotically energetic and creative people I've worked with. You know, you're kind of this force of nature, which I think in
this feels like a microaggression.
It is. It's, I'll just blatantly say it. I'll be actively aggressive. But no, I say that to say, like, I feel like a mindset of like the SaaS, the VC funded startup world generally, from my perspective that I've seen, is like people succeed who are like maniacally ambitious, or like, you could say like, I don't know, naively ambitious, like we're going to do the thing like by hook or by crook kind of thing, which you're very good at that. Right. And I think, I mean, I observe with you and Shane, like it's kind of a match made in heaven, and you get money to do the thing, to do these ambitious campaigns, because like you have the idea and you're like, it's so crazy.
Yeah.
I think we could pull it off, and you do. And that's kind of like that's how you succeed in this world.
Yeah. 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 No, I think that's fair. I think that I agree that there's like a maniacal ambition that's largely, I think it's more of a founder like energy thing. Mm-hmm. Like, and there's like this idea to prove
founder mode.
I mean, and I think, you see it in, I think any actually successful founder probably has some like level of like outsized ambition and ego and need to prove something, and it's how they do it or die trying. And I think there's something about that. I do respect it. My thing is more like there's like a hole inside me that I'm trying to fill endlessly by.
It's like, okay. My dog didn't love me either.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, it's like I'm trying to. Like,
so the hole is validation. So big you had to marry a therapist.
I did, we talk about it every day.
That's why he's such a wife guy.
He's a therapist guy.
I'm a therapist wife guy. It's even worse. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. You're trying to like, I do take to that environment well, because I am trying to constantly prove that I can do this thing. And I think increasingly, right, like as you age in this industry, I think about that a lot, because I'm old, I'm 40 and I'm doing this stuff. Yeah. And I work with a bunch of, people in their 20s and increasingly people in their early 20s. There's like a sense of like aging in this industry that I find kind of weird and sad and poetic and haunting. And like, because like you really are done. Like there's no especially now with all the agentic bullshit, like you're kind of cooked. Mm-hmm. Like you're really, there's like, what am I really doing? And so there's like an interesting question, like what is 40, the 10 years look
like? Well, I mean, something like you though, it's like you're almost only strengthened by like any whatever AI worry because like you're a producer.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not like, I do worry. I mean, I don't know how I would have, I do think about like, how do people start their careers now? Because like all the stuff that I had done, I used to do, right, is now very much an AI solution, like research mm-hmm. or even like early blog writing or any of these things are all kind of being done now, increasingly automated.
Well, that's how I started.
Totally, yeah.
I was just writing like $20 per unit blogs that absolutely sucked.
That's how you started, is that? I mean, that's how you started at AIR, wasn't it? As an intern doing writing, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think like, I wonder if that, I don't even know if that role, forget AIR, like in general, are there people hiring interns to do writing at tech startups? I don't know.
I saw an interesting discourse on my timeline the other day. It was a screenshot of a headline by Naomi Kanakia, who has contributed to Dirt. And the headline was like, highbrow literature has a fandom now and writers need to know how to manage it, I think was what it was. And somebody screenshotted it and said, why does every Substack sound like this? And then there's all these comments of people being like, basically pretending not to understand what that headline means. And I was like, do you really not understand the headline? Or do you just disagree with the reality of book publishing as a marketplace?
Mm.
Because I was like, okay, let me go. I was like, that seems pretty obvious to me. Like when you have an audience or a fandom around highbrow literature, whatever you want to call it, that's not necessarily contemporary literature. If you're writing contemporary highbrow literature, you need to understand how to cultivate and manage a fandom or you will not make money.
Yeah.
That to me, I'm like, oh yeah, water wet. So then I went to read the full thing. And I was like, that's basically what she says. And she puts it in like supply and demand terms as well, in terms of like, publishing houses buy books, and at the point they buy the book, it becomes a product. It's the same thing with paintings, which is why we call it the art market now instead of the art world, which is an insight that I stole from Fran Lebowitz. But Fran, put it in writing next time. I know you can't. So publishing, like we still call it the publishing world. We don't call it the publishing market or the book market, but that is what it is. And so people get really upset. And it's like, you have somebody coming to you on Substack, translating the economic reality that you are claiming you dislike the semantics, but you just dislike capitalism. And that's okay. But if you want to write a book and sell it and not just give it away on a street corner, you need to understand how to cultivate an audience in the same way that like every other pillar of the entertainment industry does. And we're dealing with like a lot of context collapse because music and books and blog posts are all distributed on the same platforms. And so it's like, I understand being frustrated with the reality, but I don't like the willful ignorance of attacking somebody else's semantics and writing because you can't accommodate the idea. And I think there's like this strain right now of people who like want to just write off any of the market dynamics in the creative industries because they're uncomfortable with running a business or money, but they still want to get paid. And I'm like, yeah, it sucks, but wouldn't you rather be educated? And wouldn't you rather have like a thesis on where things are going and be part of it? That's where I'm like, what you're saying about the thing that reminded me of that, like software, SaaS, whatever you want to call it, is in a way more honest.
Yeah.
Because you're operating from the starting point of serving a marketplace. And I think in publishing, it's like you should always come out of it and come to it from the perspective of creating and disseminating art. But you need to recognize the point at which that art becomes a product and be able to run your mind on two parallel tracks that can accommodate the book to the extent that it's art and the book to the extent that it's product. And if you can't, the least that you can do is not sit on Twitter and attack other people who can do that. Then it's like shut the fuck up time.
I'm reminded of your tweet a few weeks ago about the person who is like appalled that somebody reached out to advertise in their newsletter. And you were like, if this was me, I would have taken that money and used it to hire some reporter or writer or whatever.
Literally could have run an essay competition on vibes. And they're going to like give that money to somebody else. But are people
really upset about like selling out now? Like people are still, there's like this, who's got like the,
we've come back around to the 90s.
Yeah. It feels very 90s. It feels like, I thought sellout was in culture was embraced now. I thought it was like at the back.
Well, it's like, I mean, it's like the same thing as like third wave gentrifiers, right? People are upset that there's like a Chanel store on in Bedford Avenue now.
Yeah.
But there was like, people were upset when there was like a Catbird and a Brooklyn Fox. But
that
because
was I was upset. I was,
it was already,
yeah, right. Was there. So yours was like, that was already like second wave gentrification. So yeah, I think that the layers of sellout critique actually correspond pretty well to like layers of like gentrifier critique.
Yeah.
Where people are like, selling out is basically like compulsory, but people have decided to create like a new hierarchy within it. I mean, there was a point at which selling out meant selling your book at all.
Yeah.
I think the only people who get really dinged on it now are people who've built a brand around criticizing other people for doing that or not doing that and then doing it themselves.
I don't know. Having been married to someone who published a book at a major publishing house and seeing how hard it is to sell books, how excruciatingly hard it is to get people to give a shit about your book, I can say that it's a pretty privileged place to be like, you don't need to give a fuck about the sale, man. Like, dude, it's hard. Like it's really hard. There's a lot of shit out there now. And I don't know, activating people around something is really tough. Getting people to like a post is tough, right? Getting people to listen to a podcast is tough. Getting people to do anything.
Or subscribe. Art. Like from the perspective of like making money or selling something to somebody, like most people, if you came to them tomorrow and were like, you need to make $1,000 in the next 24 hours, would run around with a chicken. Like a chicken with their head cut off.
Yeah.
And I've like literally had to do that before and I've done it. It wasn't fun. It's almost harder to do that than it is to make $10,000 or find $10,000. Mm. But that's essentially what you're asking people to do when you say, go out and sell your book.
Yeah.
And like, if you're sitting in your house and you have a great book idea and you think it's the next great American novel, picture what it would take to sell that to 100 people. Picture what it would take to even sell that to 10 people. Yeah. And then you have a better idea of the reality, which is not really like the Substacks, the availability bias of the Substacks. You see where they do really catch fire and get a lot of people paying for it. Like that's just not going to be the reality for most people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I have like a lot of respect for small business owners. I think like whatever you're selling, I mean, drop shippers, fuck you guys, but like you found a way to get people to buy plastic shit. And to that, for that, I salute you because most of us can't even get people to buy essays.
Well, this is reminding me of like this cottage industry of people using AI to generate children's books that they then sell on Amazon. I saw this tweet earlier that was like, don't give your child like money for Christmas or something like that. Instead, you know, invest this much money in setting up a children's book on Amazon that will then generate you $2,000 in passive income for, you know, years of their life. I did want to ask
about, wait, can I say one more thing? Sorry, yeah. I've been talking for a while, but like this is my ultimate black pill. It should be a black pill for anyone. It's almost too depressing to say. So if I personally, like Daisy Alietto, want to go out and write an essay right now for a mainstream publication or like a reported piece, I could probably get about $2,000 for it. And it'll take me a few hours to write. If I wanted to make $2,000 off of dirt, I would have to sell 400 monthly $5 subscriptions. So my money, like it's easier for me to create value on a few hours of my time right now writing an essay than it is to monetize a brand that I've been building for the past like 3 or 4 years by getting 400 people to buy a monthly subscription.
Yeah, but there are other ways you can get. You could also be like
100%. I could also sell a single ad. I'm just saying like when people say to people starting a Substack, oh, just sell subscriptions, they're not taking into account that, like, my writing in the beginning, and at a certain point, they bypass each other. But in the beginning, your money and labor and employment is worth more on the open marketplace than anything that you could possibly build, maybe even for the first 10 years that you're building it.
Yeah.
Because the job that I quit to raise investment for Dirt was paying me $130,000 a year. But it would take me years for Dirt to make $130,000 a year in net revenue, despite all the value that I've created, all the writing that I've published, this whole world that I've built. At the end of the day, I could make more money working in B2B SaaS as an employee, literally doing nothing, doing like bullshit job David Graeber stuff. And so there's like, that is a black pill in and of itself, right?
Yeah. But you're, to your point, the sort of universe that you've built and the all the kind of constellations around that that are, I think, probably revenue generating are probably longer term going to be more interesting for you as you build this business out, right? Like, clearly, like, you also own a thing.
Your black pill, you're saying, is that it should be as easy to start a small business and make a good living from it as it is to be an employee.
No, I don't think it should be easy necessarily, but I'm saying, like, part of the reason most people don't do it is because for a very long time, your time, effort, no matter what you create, is not worth as much as your ass in front of a computer in an office in Midtown, and maybe never will be. So it really like challenges your idea of what value means and what it means to create value, even in like the way that startup pill people talk about creating value on Twitter, because they all got like radicalized by that Australian startup TikTok and the product managers and the
Gen Z Boss Mini. Mm-hmm.
What's Australian? Yeah. Which is the Australian startup?
No, it's the Gen Z Boss in a Mini.
Gen Z Boss in a Mini.
Oh, yeah.
And those girls who were product managers who were working from the pool. But the fact of the matter is, even if those girls quit their job and made a small business tomorrow, they would not be able to replace their salary. So you can get mad at individuals, but you can't get mad at the system, which is really like designed to keep people in employment for healthcare and like a living.
Well, that's why I moved to Canada.
I'm going to move to Canada.
When did you move again?
2 years ago.
2 years ago. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wait, to be clear, does your wife have Canadian citizenship or you?
I do. I was born here. I was born here.
So,
but I left when I was like six. I never lived here, really. Mm-hmm. But I have a passport, so I got
we give us the that. we had a Vancouverite on a couple weeks ago.
Oh yeah,
give us the Toronto scene report.
Toronto, excuse me. I don't know.
Are you saying
it's Toronto?
Toronto.
I think Toronto is. My wife and I are huge Toronto fans, and we love it. And I think it's
go Leafs.
A really exceptional city that has. I mean, look, marred by really bad public transport and infrastructure issues, but is I think I would argue is maybe the best food city in the world.
Whoa,
unexpected, but you have it's the most international city I've ever lived in. You have pockets, and I'm talking about the greater
Toronto area. New York.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, we also aren't like banning like citizens from like 37 countries from coming.
We're not
here,
banning so, citizens, period.
Or yeah, I mean, or just banning everything. So I think there's like a feeling of it's no utopia, but you know, we have like, you know, we have a really quite progressive mayor, and I think a city that values like, I don't know, it's a great city to have kids in. We live on a lake that you can swim in, and it's not like a garbage town, and there's markedly less violence in living in the US, and I don't worry about my children being able to access birth control. So for me, it's a win. And I don't think, again, it's not perfect, but I think, yeah, we feel quite lucky that we can live here.
Do you miss anything about Iowa, where you were before?
I love Iowa. I love Iowa. I'm gonna get my hat.
Where's the hat? Put the hat back on.
Put the hat back on, God damn it, for Iowa.
Oh, I didn't realize you were actually living in Iowa. I thought you were living in New York and working for...
I was. I went to NYU. I lived in New York for a long time. That's the impression I try to give. I hate New York. It's my thing. That's my...
Milton Glaser, eat your heart out.
Hate it. Like, don't like it. Don't want to live there. Live there for a long time. I don't hate it, but my brother lives there. My friends are there, but...
I met my wife.
He was on the front lines gentrifying Williamsburg.
I just don't. I find it.
You bought the first Cortado in Williamsburg.
Who, me or my brother?
Me. You.
I did buy the first. I used to go to Marlowe and Sons and buy
Which
Cortados.
Just closed.
I know. End of an era, man. Now it's,
who threw the first brick at Cha-Cha Matcha?
My brother used to work at Cha-Cha Matcha.
Okay, so that was a shot in the dark. I actually didn't know that.
Yeah, true. Anyway, I don't hate New York. I shouldn't say that because we also are a New York based company, and I'm there constantly.
Well, it's no
now.
Utopia.
Mm-hmm. Well, what is? I don't know. I mean, look, Mom Donnie, a lot of wind in the old sails. Don't tell the tech bros, but I think that's exciting.
Yeah. Zoran's New York, baby.
Zoran's New York, man. Things the Mom Donna shifts. Mumdonnaissance. I like that. That's quite exciting to see that things are possible.
The city is going to crumble now because everyone's going to move to Palm.
Well, I can't go there now because I'm Jewish. And of course I can't be in Mumdonnaissance, New York because of the pogroms that are coming and the camps they're going to build now for the Jews. But, I thought that I was in New York when he got won the primary. That was really, really exciting. Really cool.
I think the actual ranked choice vote counts today.
Should come out today. I'm excited to see that. You know, Ridgewood went plus 69.
66. It was crazy. Commie
corridor.
Ridgewood. Yeah.
The commie corridor is amazing. It's amazing. It's like, I don't know.
I'm also Jewish and in between stealing tables at voting.
You're Jewish?
Zoran was always quite nice to me. You knew that.
Did I know you're Jewish?
Mm-hmm. We've had this conversation. You're Italian and Jewish.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what we have had that conversation. You are what my, you are what my children.
I'm so dangerous.
What my children will be one day is Italian Jews.
Yeah.
Worst of both worlds. No, I'm just kidding.
No, it's very much the case. Ask my husband, Guy.
Your husband.
My wife. Ask my wife, Guy.
ask the wife, Guy, what he thinks. Yeah. But I like Toronto. It's also, Canadians have such an insecure and inferiority complex about themselves in general, but especially in Toronto to New York. And like all my friends in Toronto, and I do extol.
Can't be worse than the San Franciscans, though.
I don't know, man. People here are really down on themselves. I mean, the reality is this country, like, you can't really make money in it. And so that keeps everyone at a certain level of either like down, but also like everyone wants to move to the States. So, I mean, they're like dying to move to the States. Anyone who has like an idea wants to go to the States to make
it's like buying a lottery ticket, though.
Moving to the States.
The American dream.
Yeah.
The American
dream.
But it's very much alive and well in Toronto. I would say like all these smart kids who we work with, interns and stuff are like very, and they're like really, really intelligent, ambitious young people are like New York, 100%.
Or what amount of money would they be happy with? And do they want to pay it out in rent?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, it's just a sense that you can go and make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, many times over. And that in Canada, it's really, there aren't really many opportunities to get mega rich here. You really can't get like supremely wealthy in Canada in my way I understand it. Unless you inherit money.
Yeah. I keep wanting to bring, I'm just gonna bring up now the Cluely thing. You posted about this on LinkedIn. It was like the day we were gonna
yeah.
To the listener, we were gonna have Ari on a couple weeks ago. There was some technical difficulties on my side. You had just posted about the Cluely video, which had just come out. It's like this insane, like when you said like opportunities to get rich, I'm thinking of it because it's like 19 year olds.
Yeah.
I'm generalizing a little bit there.
No, you're quite right.
It's just
though.
Like peer distribution.
Yeah.
Pure like it, I don't know, it seems like such a pure expression of like VC funded startup dumb.
Yeah, it's like pure nihilism. I think it's fantastic. I really like it. I'm into it. I support it. I want to be more involved in it. I met some of the people who work there. I like got on calls with them because I wanted to understand how they think about it. The problem with like criticizing AI tech is that you sound like a boomer and like a D-cell and like everyone dismisses you for that. And like, well, of course he would say that. He's 40 and like loser. But like, I think every AI product, which is like designed to make you not think, is fucked and like a tool for only like turning you into a soft-brained, like bootlicking fucking victim of like whatever fascist nightmare we get, and like we deserve whatever we get if this is the fucking like Cluely's literal MO is like never think again, like
never think, cheat on everything.
And they say that, and I think that that's like a really fascinating like marker of like whatever Gen Z nihilism.
Well, I think this is part of A16Z's accelerationism.
They decide
like every couple of years they just appoint a random representative of complete accelerationism, nihilism, whatever you want to call it, economic, intellectual, and political breakdown, just because they have the money and they can. But my question is, like, is that going to work? Is that what the people want? Because I personally think the tech right made a huge mistake in wedding themselves to the Trump administration in hopes of
there was just that thing today,
the
big beautiful bill or whatever. They voted 99-1 to take out the clause saying that states couldn't regulate AI for the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, the tech right got in bed with the Trump administration thinking it would allow them to enact more of the agenda. But if they're wrong, the majority of the American public has already turned against Silicon Valley, and their kind of big hope for power is now in AI. Like, if they cannot have successful political power and the pendulum swings back to more socialist ideas like Zoran's ideas, because people are like, wow, like first administration felt like populism. This felt like populism plus Elon Musk and all these like weird, creepy people.
Does this
like
one
Peter
even
Thiel.
Feel like populism though? I feel like that facade has quickly fallen though.
Silicon Valley has squandered all soft power. People don't think founders are cool anymore. They don't think Jeff Bezos is cool. They don't think Mark Zuckerberg's cool. They think being rich is cool. But if you align yourself with an administration that will actively inhibit the economy and people don't get rich, your only hope for like hard power, not even soft power, is to just destroy any agency that American public has by infiltrating AI into everything. And they've put all of their eggs into that basket.
I think it'll
because
work.
If these AI companies don't succeed, there's no like all the venture dollars in the US are going to get washed out.
Ari, you said you think it'll work?
Yeah, I think it's working. I think it's happening. I think
too big to fail.
My dad and his wife keep sharing these AI, and I don't know if they even know their AI. That it's AI. These AI videos about like, insane AI shit about Iran and Netanyahu and Greta Thunberg and stuff like that. And I think that for them, like. Already, I think Instagram and the algorithm were all kind of like supplanting critical thought. But I think AI is going to be the nail in the coffin for a great many people. And I think we're going to have
UBI for all these people who like literally can't read to live off of.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that I don't know. But there'll be some sense. I don't know what that'll be. But that, I think they'll succeed. Don't you?
I mean, the primary criticism of Democrats for so long was like the welfare state. You're creating people that don't work. You're creating people reliant on the government. Well, what happens when AI replaces everyone's job? They're creating essentially a caste system of people with critical thinking and without critical thinking.
Yeah, I don't know. That's bad news. But I do like Clueless marketing. And I think they're doing a great job, unironically.
At the end of the day, we just want these little kids to succeed.
And you know what's going to happen? The Cluely marketing team, some tech right candidate is going to hire them to try to replicate 100% on social media.
They should. Well, I mean, in a way, what Cluely's doing is just like what the Trump campaign did, actually. I mean, it's not. And it's like slightly less memetic warfare and more into like UGC with like literally like endless kids pumping shit with like really high gloss fucking production. But like, it's kind of the same thing really. And like unapologetic founder, he's doing like a Trump, Elon Musk thing anyway. Right. Like no publicity is good, bad. And like all dick jokes and like strippers and whatever. And it's like kind of the same shit. I don't know. It's basically the Trump playbook for getting elected.
Okay. But let's talk about another dumbing down as it were. So your LinkedIn posts usually do pretty good. I found one a month or so ago that didn't do as well. That was it was you like downloaded a video from some influencer's account and re-uploaded it. And it was all the like the silly little things you could do at Figma's config conference.
I don't like this to be negative. You know, dumb. I don't like to be negative on LinkedIn, but sometimes I am. And that was I was negative because I do that shit when they do like the bait. Don't you hate when they do? They treat you like a baby at stuff when they're like, there's the teddy bear station, like the Build-A-Bear. They're like, what are we doing here, folks? We're like, presumably you're in your 20s. Like,
well, okay. I think you were here for this. Yeah. This must be what you were referencing that you were here for last week. Air just threw an event where you guys tray passed cigarettes.
We did.
Which is like the opposite of that.
Yeah, we gave out cigs, baby. Cigs are back.
Okay, did anybody smoke them and could you smoke them inside?
A lot of people smoked them and you could not smoke them inside.
That's a pity. I was reminiscing, Daisy. I was just in Berlin and I was reminded, I was looking at my phone. As we were workshopping the logo for this podcast, I was smoking cigs inside at a bar in Berlin. It was great. So I think there should be more. I think we should re-legalize smoking indoors. Why six? Why did you guys? Why are you passing on six?
I think we just thought it was funny that bad
air.
Bad air was funny. I like bad air and good air.
Okay.
And so I thought, and I think six is back in New York. Whenever I come back to New York, everyone's smoking again, which is, I think, is actually great or a recession indicator. But
were you smoking?
I did not smoke a cig.
You can wink if you just.
No, I didn't. I have had a cig on occasion, though. I will smoke a cigarette and enjoy it a lot.
You can enjoy it.
I will.
He'll allow himself that.
Yeah, we do.
All right, what is it's notable to me that your name is one letter off from the company that you work for.
Yeah, that's right.
People think he's the founder.
Who is Ari and who is Air?
Oh, God. You know, if I had a nickel. Well, the great story, Daisy, is that my name isn't even Ari. It's Ariel. I don't even go by Ari.
From talking to your wife.
Yeah. And all my friends and family are like, why are you going by Ari?
It's his SaaS persona.
It's my SaaS persona. I just, when I interviewed at the company, I was like, oh, my name, what's the email? And they're like, it's air.inc. And I was like, oh, it'd be funny if it was Ari at air.inc.
That's his email, everybody. You can email him.
Every time you email me, I'm like, that's good. That's a good joke.
That's good. I know. That's how I feel too. So I'm like, it's great. I did for that.
Not as sexy as Daisy at dirt.fyi, but it's
Daisy at dirt.fyi is much sexier than Ari at air.inc. Yeah. But I enjoy it. And I have like got my Ari on occasion the best, but Ariel is my actual name. And so I don't know. That's but I have been working here for a long time. It's almost been 4 years at air.inc, which is fucking lifetime in tech. And it's been a real
roller coaster. I've stayed anywhere 4 years.
This is the longest I've worked anywhere in my life. So it's crazy because it's a pretty flighty industry.
Yeah, when we
a lot of homie hoppers in SaaS.
You've had both. You're like the head of content at Air now. Previously, you've been the head of comms or similar title.
Yeah,
is there any substantive difference between those? I feel like maybe there used to be, but maybe there isn't anymore. What is content versus comms?
Yeah, there's not really. I mean, I think that I was director of comms, I guess, and this sort of like folded in now into all things
at Come and Go or at the Red
Cross. At Come and Go and here. No, at the Red Cross, I was the head.
But when you joined there, yeah, you were comms. I was about comms. That.
And I think actually the more substantive difference is the person we hired to be our head of marketing, who you met at the Webbies as well. Who's,
yeah.
This guy, Jeff, came from a really nice guy and a really intelligent.
He's at Duolingo and Figma, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, you know, we're obviously like very different. What we do is very different, and he is a real marketer in the sense of like understanding how marketing works, which is like not something I really can do from like in any meaningful way. Like I can try to think of like a clever way to fold in a porn star to a video, but he can like figure out how to like bring people along that journey of figuring out how to bring them into the area.
Distribute it.
Yeah. And that
we're good at like risk and bets.
Yeah. And I think it's nice to work with a marketing person now, like a lead marketing head who can like, I think we work, it's a nice to have that role here. Like comms, I feel like is like, what is, yeah, to your point, like what, a fucking write a press release that no one reads or like a blog post no one looks at?
Well, I think like, yeah, like with Beehive, like Tyler, our comms is like Tyler writing his newsletter to 100,000 people every week and like talking about how this company, we acquired Type Dream like a year ago. And that was his, that was his newsletter today. It's like the story behind the acquisition, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, he doesn't need a comms person because he just knows how to write and is opinionated.
Well, he's like a great example of like a founder who's like, I mean, not dissimilar from Roy from the Clooly. Like it's
the Clooly guys. Yeah. Yeah. It's just a different medium.
Like, become the story, be the story, do real founder led in a way that people actually give a shit and want to follow you and be like a little dangerous.
This works better for men than women.
Yeah, I agree.
This is a good
point.
Absolutely
right. You're absolutely right. Because these men are all unapologetically fucking assholes and they are like, own it. And that's like part of the vibe. And when women
hear that, Tyler,
when women do that, they just get fucking, they get, you know, usually like,
no, you get girl bossed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like that post. You see, like, I'm sure you saw it like a couple weeks ago when Emily Sundberg and Rachel Carton were at Apple and they were like,
oh yeah.
Puck was like,
and oh. Puck was like demeaning them.
Yeah. It's like,
well, yeah, I think it was like a little too focused on age cohort.
Yeah.
At the same time, like Tina Brown wrote The Only Good Thing About the Bezos Wedding and she's still cooking.
Mm-hmm.
So there have definitely been, I mean, also like, who is it? Mina just raised like a ton of money for her AI startup.
Which one?
Beats Me, which is, I'm part
Mira,
of
it. It's Mira Marathi. She raised a monster round.
Well, the AI people can do whatever they want. Like, I don't think it matters.
AI people can do whatever they want. But I would say in terms of startup founders, especially as it pertains to women in media, it's rough out there.
Yeah, I can see that. Mm-hmm. I can see that. But you're carrying the flag, Daisy.
I'm trying.
All right, I think that's a great place to end it.
Yeah, all right. This has been Tasteland.
Thank you for coming on.
Ari. Hey, thanks for having me.
We'll do it again sometime.
All right. Well, appreciate you guys. Nice to see you.